Hello and welcome to Chatty AF, the Anime Feminist Podcast, and our 200 episode and plus spectacular, where we cover Revolutionary Girl Utena with myself, who's watched it too many times, and my two wonderful co-hosts who are watching it for the first time. Sai and Chiaki, do you want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Chiaki Hirai. I am one of the editors for NFM, business manager, and you can find me at Chiaki747 on the bird site that is slowly dying, dead bird site, and at terrible.moe at Blue Sky, Chiaki747 on co-host, and Chiaki747 on Twitch, Chiaki747 on Bstream, Chiaki747. Just cut me off, Peter.
Girl, you have to get a link tree. Girl.
I was going to say, where's your link tree or your card, Chiaki? Come into 2024.
It's literally terrible.moe.
There. I love that. And I'm Sai, and you can find me at Pixelated Lenses on everything, including Twitter, because I refuse to update it on my phone, and y'all, it is breaking, but I still got that bird, and that's what counts.
Counts for something. And I'm Vry Kaiser. I'm not on social media all that much. I am on Blue Sky at Writer Vry. But more importantly, we have, speaking of link trees, consolidated all of Anafem's links onto linktr.ee/animefeminist. And if you're ever looking for stuff, whether that's our site, our store, our Patreon, you can find them all there very easily. It's cool beans. This week we are covering episodes 13 through 20, which is the first recap episode and the first half of the Black Rose Saga. As a reminder to folks in the comments, this is a spoiler-free podcast, so everything we've covered up to this point is fair game, but please be mindful of other folks who might be watching the series for the first time. Also, general content warnings. This show is sort of pre-regulations about flashing lights, so there are a lot of them, especially during the duel sequences. And also, keep in mind, basically throughout, content warnings for implications of sexual abuse, incest, and of course, instances of physical abuse. And lots of child abuse. Am I forgetting anything?
No, I think that about covers it.
I was going to say, I think that covers it.
I also wanted to chime in. When we recorded the first episode, I was just using my Blu-rays because I'm lazy, but I watched on Crunchyroll this time around. And so just as a translation watch from the old DVDs to Crunchyroll is in fact using the new updated Blu-ray translation thread. And one of the more significant changes that I wanted to flag up for folks who may have not watched the updated translation is the newer subs translate Utena-sama as mistress rather than miss, which I feel like really hammers home the loadedness of the relationship that makes Utena so uncomfortable. So I think it was a good choice.
I do want to chime in that for anyone who was concerned and listened to the previous episode, I did watch it in Japanese. Okay, are we all happy?
Funny story, I watched this over like twice to make sure I got it. So the second time, I watched it in English.
So you got that Dan Green goodness.
Yeah, I did. It was pretty good.
Vindication. Ah, yeah. I do think this arc would have sent me on an emotional roller coaster had I watched it in English.
I would like to complain that Crunchyroll does not use the actual ending credits. They use the English credits that used to run. After all the episodes on the Nozomi DVDs, just as an extra little thing. And that's not the end of the world. Mm-hmm. But it does bother me. It bothers me a lot, especially once we get to the second ending, which has a really neat story around fandom preservation to it. Yeah. So yeah. As a general feeler out, how y'all feeling?
Oh, they're children. Oh God.
Yep.
Where's an
yep.
adult?
How?
Where's an actual legal adult instead of a middle schooler being like, I know about adult things like watching people kiss in a movie or jewelry. Where's an actual adult, please?
Well, have you seen the actual adults?
And that was an elementary school kid.
Yeah.
Anthony's brother is an adult. Yeah. Akio's an adult.
That too. Okay. Mikage's like, those guys in Mikage's office going like, you know, hey, I need some help from ya. You know, those official looking people.
Where is a safe adult? A safe adult that's a mandatory reporter that has to tell the principal, hey, there is some shit happening. Did you see that Rose Club? We didn't authorize that. Where's the paperwork?
I don't know if the principal would necessarily care.
I have such bad news for you, Sai.
They're children.
Yeah. So also, bad. Suwabuki's not even a middle schooler. He's in sixth grade.
Yeah.
He's a tiny baby. I guess that is middle school in some places, but...
I do love that he was like, I know about adult things, proceeds to watch people kiss in movies. Like, sweet child. Oh, little baby.
He's so little and also small.
Yeah. Oh, he's so small. None of them are ready to be adults.
No.
Oh, none of them are ready.
You've hit upon the theme. I do... There is an interesting story. So last time I read one of the pieces of creator commentary from the booklet that comes along with the box sets, mm-hmm. and there's some interesting stuff in relation to the first Black Rose episode, where Ikuhara sort of talks about what initially interested him when he was writing this arc. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because there's another one I want to read and this one's a little long. But he basically talks about how... about, like, discourse in Japan being this very polarized thing where you're either successful or a loser. You know, you're rich or you're broke. You've won or you've lost. You're chosen or you're not. And being... having this book specifically about the bubble era that really stuck in his mind, which he would have grown up during the bubble and then Utena would have been made after the bubble burst. So I feel like that sort of sense of betrayal is kind of an interesting undercurrent to the series.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think the just like the 2008 Lehman Shock, the Japanese bubble bursting basically traumatized an entire generation of Japanese people. So absolutely a thing that would kind of shake the very core belief of your place in society.
Yeah, the other interesting thing that's about the Black Rose saga for folks who were not around back in the 2000s, around the time... it was not universal, but very popular for battle shonen at the particularly like long runners to go one of two ways where, you know, either you would do anime, you would just break off from the manga entirely, right? And you would do anime only material, sort of like Sailor Moon or Soul Eater or Full Metal Alchemist 03. Or you would sort of stall and do self-contained anime original plots while you waited for the manga to catch up, basically. These arcs could be frustrating for longtime viewers because they can be interesting and have interesting characters of their own accord, but they're not really allowed to make dramatic changes in terms of long-term character growth or changes to the world because you don't want to overwrite something that might be disproven by the manga you're waiting to adapt later. And that was the original, very specific context of the word filler. The word filler quickly lost all meaning and eventually diffused to such a point that people use it for just any old thing that basically means episode I don't like or didn't feel directly advanced the plot enough. I bring it up because it was not universal, but also not uncommon for people to say that you could skip the Black Rose saga back in the day. That it was filler between the first and the third arc.
What?
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Because... Excuse me? What?
Uh-huh. This I assure you, so you cannot do it.
To the show.
Uh-huh.
No. No, this is so essential. So many things get opened and we learn so many horrible things about the way Anthy's whole existence is. What?
Yeah.
I don't see this the internet as wrong. Yeah, like how do you look at this and go, "Yes, this is absolutely filler. This has nothing to do with anything."
I believe the logic and this mostly this is subjective experience because I'll admit that I'm sort of burned out on Shonen Jump and Battle Shonen generally's whole thing and pretty cynical about it. But this was a take I mostly saw from people who pretty exclusively watched Battle Shonen. And I think the logic is that this arc focuses on fleshing out secondary characters a lot. And it isn't explicitly about Utena and the mystery about her prince.
Oh, I see. So it's because none of these characters matter.
Excuse me.
Ooh. Yes, Jackie, you've nailed it.
Internet has some. People are so literate. It's so wild to me that someone. It is so wild to me that someone could say you could skip this entire ass arc that has like a lot happening and has some really big emotional moments that like definitely are going to alter how Anthy and Utena's relationship is going ahead. What? Wow. Ooh.
You know what? You know what? Though there is some filler in this arc.
Uh huh.
And it's the Nami episode.
This is incorrect. Nami episodes are crucial.
Are you sure?
They're crucial to the overall themes. Yes, they're crucial to. I need to not break down and cry about these children every 5 minutes.
You know
please.
What? I will absolutely say I will die on this hill. That cow episode is essential viewing.
In a way, yes.
And if you skip it, you are going to miss a very poignant part of this overall story. And also a lesson and how sometimes when you buy a fake or you get somebody else's stuff, it's not for you. And I'll die on that hill.
Sometimes you just want to be a cow.
That cow episode is seared into my brain.
Mm-hmm.
God, sometimes you do just want to be a cow.
Have you ever heard of furries?
You know what? This must have been really. This might have been someone's awakening.
Yeah.
You know what? I could just put on a dog collar and just like. You know.
And good for that person.
Like, shout out to my furries. Shout out to my feminist furries, and scalies. Love y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's nice. It's also really funny to me that people get really confused by the Nanami episodes when, at least to me, they have the most straightforwardly written moral parables about them as such.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's yeah, just... Like, a lot of wacky stuff happens in that episode, but it pretty on-the-nose tells you that... Pretending like you know, like pretending that you know something about when you don't, will probably make you look foolish.
Yeah, I do love in that episode though that another lesson is that Utena can also speak in Spanish because she does hit that ole. She hits it like perfectly, and I was like, okay, Utena, a woman of many talents.
This is an important detail.
It really is. Also that Anthy can knit, like, I stan a fiber art queen.
She has so many talents. How are y'all feeling about Anthy, by the way? I feel like I should check in with y'all on that every week.
Wow. I really want Anthy to get therapy and emancipation from everything.
Yeah. I think, well, she's in such an environment where she doesn't recognize that everyone around her is terrible. And it's very difficult. Like, unless somebody suggests she gets therapy, she's never going to get it. And I don't think anyone within this group of people will ever suggest that. So, you know, she's probably gonna be a little trapped there. And, you know, this is where fan fiction would come in, where you just insert yourself and you go, I am taking Anthy to a psychiatrist. A therapist.
If only there was somebody there who could save her from this situation.
Or Utena was a little bit more aware of how to handle something like this normally instead of having duels.
Yeah.
Granted, she's a middle schooler, so like I don't blame her for not knowing how to handle this, which I did say multiple times, these are children.
It's true.
Wow, are these children.
Yeah, it's both extremely... It's sad and extremely frustrating in such a real way that Utena is not picking up any of the bad vibes around this very cool adult.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about him? Like, are we going to go episode by episode? But can we?
I have this structured episode by episode, but we can also just vibes. Yeah, no, please do tell me your thoughts about Akio.
Oh, wow. So I was like, I was vibing and I was like, oh, he seems like a decent guy. And I was like, it's interesting because like Akio is kind of the only darker skinned, like SEA Southeast Asian, like kind of marked character, coded character that like has some level of power. And then I found out why he had some power, because I was like, oh no, is that why Anthony's going to visit her brother? Oh no. And I got really scared because I had a sudden realization that maybe there's some incest in this series, and maybe that's very bad. Oh no, Akio, you suck.
I did warn you about the incest.
Oh, and now I understand, because like all these years I've seen a picture of like this brown skinned guy with this brown skinned girl. And I was like, oh, what if they're a couple? Oh, they are, and it's the worst. It's forced. It's bad. It's not good.
Just coming in with like everything going on, I just assume he's the worst person. I have no idea. I have no real understanding of how he plays into this in the end game, but I'm just like looking at him like, I don't trust you. You are absolutely on a list.
Yeah, and it's like, this is a good reminder, folks at home, if you are watching along, do not skip the recap episodes, because A, they're a nice refresher, especially if you're us and a lot of things happened, and so this episode is being recorded a couple months after the last one, but also they tend to drop useful little tidbits, like we do in fact see Dio and that he and Akio have some kind of relationship in the midst of, also here's what happened in the last arc. So, just something to keep in mind going forward. But I think, yeah, you mentioned, I do have our notes here episode by episode. Let's kind of start with Akio's fiance, Kanai. Because I think her duel, as I think y'all have noted here, really does kind of set the tone for how the rest of these are going to work.
Kanae just like seems like such a sweet girl. And then she goes into that Black Rose interview and she is just like, I'm a hater. And I hate my fiance's sister with a vengeance. Something ain't right about that girl. And I don't like her. Just like, Kanai, God, Anthony's having such a shit time. Could you hate somebody else?
Like, okay, here's the thing, though. I understand totally where she's coming from, because, like, these things are innocuous issues that people have with other people that kind of blossom into full-blown hatred because people don't want to deal with it, and people assume that, you know, it's just going to get better because the assumption is, for Kanai, Anthy knows what, you know, is a decent person, so obviously Anthy will act in a way that a decent person that I believe will act. And Anthy doesn't. And, you know, for anyone out there, like, it doesn't have to be Anthy. It could have been anyone else. They are not going to act exactly as what you expect. And, you know, like, oh yeah, if you give somebody a scarf and they use it as something to clean their glasses, like, well, people just use their scarves to clean their glasses. It's not like they were trying to insult you. But these things kind of roll up into a huge, you know, deal. And this primarily happens when you just don't talk to people or have an opportunity to really, you know, be frank with each other. And that can harbor that whole hatred.
I do wonder what Kanai's relationship to Anthy would actually be like if she understood, like, the lack of personhood that Anthy has so ingrained in her. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if she would actually not be envious or jealous, but actually quite understanding of the fact that, like, Anthy might seem like this very perfect person, but that is because she has been molded to be what people want her to be.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's actually deeply sad.
That's what all these monologues come back to, right? Is that all these people are blaming Anthy for whatever problem is ripping them up, but they're just reflecting what they were upset about onto her without actually considering who she is as a person.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, and especially with the female characters, I think, like, as you sort of nodded toward, there's a lot of issue of internalized misogyny in those conversations, and the fact that women are set up to be competition to each other.
It's interesting because Anthy is kind of an interesting look at the not like other girls trope. Mm-hmm. Only, like, it's played out in the most horrific way. Like, she isn't like other girls because she doesn't have any innate desire thus far to be like anyone at all, and like it kind of sucks from the perspective of, like, an Anthy lover to see this poor child just get hate hurled at her when, like, we know as the viewer, like, Anthy has done nothing to deserve this. Like, however she became the Rose Bride didn't deserve that either. Just sucks. And the one person who should care for her, her brother, aw, he super sucks. Like, she's only got this one person in the world who's, like, got a very fraught relationship with her. And, like, that's kind of it. I'm sorry, and Choo Choo. I can't forget the little monkey. Can't forget my boy. but, like, even he's not nice to her. Bro be eating her cake all the time. It's that true. Is not right. Let Anthy have a slice.
He's a monkey. Monkey's gonna do that.
Chiaki, are you telling me not to turn my ire against an animal? Because I will not be stopped. You can't silence me.
Okay.
I mean, would Anthy approve? This is the girl who keeps snails in her pencil box.
That's true.
Well, she doesn't have enough of a personal, like, opinion to approve, though, Vry. And it hurts. It hurts so bad because it just sucks. It sucks. See, although she does show some emotion this watch through, and, like, oof, when she does, it's because she's in fear for her life.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay.
She's having a bad time.
Yeah. Constantly. And she doesn't deserve it.
Mm-hmm. I love her.
Nor does Kanai, honestly. Like, none of the girls in this series deserve to have a bad time, and I do mean none. Like, because they're also being manipulated. And they're being manipulated by men, by pretty, and I'm gonna take us back to the 2000s, by some bad boy bishies.
that's appropriate for the convo. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, Chiaki, you made the note about the butterflies in our notes here. I think, or Sai, was that you?
That was me.
That was Sai. Yeah, thank you for pointing that out, because that's the other reason that I wanted to talk about that the Black Rose saga is really important, and that's going to get way more pronounced to a basically comical degree, is that the Black Rose saga is here so that you'll be able to read the end of the series, which is way more surreal. Where this is kind of mostly structured like normal episodes, but we're also loudly including bits of symbolism. Where, look, as they get more desperate and down to their most base and vicious desires, the butterfly regresses into a caterpillar larva. Look at it.
Yeah. And I think, like, at their most, at their lowest emotional low during the seminar, it becomes a leaf. So, like, it's not even a creature. It is just organic matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, yeah. And, yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to that surrealism, because I dig it.
The Apocalypse Saga really is stupendous, but I also like Black Rose a lot, too. You know, I made some notes about Mikage here, but I think we should leave him for next time, because we're about halfway through, and we have a lot of other good, and he'll have some backstory episodes, so we can talk more about him then.
We didn't really get a lot of him this arc anyway, right? I mean, yes, he was around, but, yeah.
But he's mostly, you know, machinating in the background, being a teen genius who is terrible and a foil to Utena.
Right.
Horrible, mm-hmm. horrible bedside manner as a therapist. Elevators as your office, worst idea.
Super uncomfortable. I mean, there's lawyers that drive around in a limousine. Why not a therapist in an elevator?
Was that a Cosmopolis reference, Chiaki?
No, that was a Lincoln just lawyer. Me?
Fair. Fair.
I mean, I get that he's like, I mean, like, I get that he's trying to escalate the situation, but like, I don't know. I wouldn't trust a guy who was like, get in my elevator and talk to me. Uh-uh. No. Granted, the one person that also is like, this doesn't seem trustworthy, Mikage is like, you're too good for this place. Get out.
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see. We sort of talked about Nanami and Tsuobuki. The only other thing I want to highlight from Tsuobuki's episode is the... these are all children element of, like, attempting to mirror behavior from fiction. Like, with the kissing scene. I feel like that's a relevant theme throughout, is all these children are playing pretend at things that they do not understand, but have really serious consequences for them.
It is so funny to me that Tsuobuki went and got, like, the school's collection of French films so that he could watch, like, kisses, and he was like, yes, I understand adulthood. And it's like, no, sweetie, you are in sixth grade. You don't, and that's okay. Like, don't be in a rush to throw away childhood, because once childhood is gone, you can't reclaim it. Like, you can reclaim aspects, but, like, once you're an adult, you're an adult. And it kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, kissing is not sex ed, Tsuobuki.
It's not, but it's not.
It's not. It's not,
but you know, it's very adult. It's very mature.
It is. It is. And I guess when you're a kid, like, that's what adulthood is. Is it's like these shows of physical affection that you see with adults is like kissing and like swiping a credit card to pay for a meal instead of going Dutch and like, you know, like mm-hmm. These like small hallmarks. Also, I just want to chime in with, what the heck did Anthony mean by Mistress Utena? We're also adults too, girls.
Girls, you're 14.
What? What? You're children.
It is. Like... I do have to wonder if, and maybe it would have just been the same because it's funny this way. But this show did also premiere in a primetime slot the year after Evangelion did all the things Evangelion did, and they wrote a whole new slew of broadcast standards.
Oh, see, I know so little about Evangelion, but that does make sense. Okay.
This is me conjecturing, waving into, like, it seems like a thing that is plausible, but I do not have explicit notes about that, so. Mm-mm. Anyway, let's talk about Shiori, because I've always sort of intellectually understood her, but I felt like I really emotionally connected with her this watch. And also, people fucking hate her, so I want to know how you're feeling.
Can I? What would help is, can you explain why people hate her?
For manipulating Juri. Like, okay, isn't she like a cold, heartless bitch who's mocking this poor lesbian who's in love with her?
See, because that's... Okay, I didn't hate her. If anything, I felt this very human, like, oh gosh, like this poor girl who's made this horrendous mistake thinking she was getting someone who was clearly the object of her affection's attention and instead has like ruined that star-crossed lover ever happening. Mm-hmm. I didn't hate her.
Yeah, I see her definitely more tragic than, you know, someone who imbues evil or, you know, gross teen attitudes or whatever. I mean, it is still kind of gross teen attitudes, but that's just like forgivable.
Yeah. Oh yeah, she's a mess, but like an understandable mess.
Yeah. I mean, like, my notes are definitely, like, I was angry at Shiori, because I did definitely say, you know, in my notes, Shiori, you dense motherfucker, but,
Yup!
Yeah, you're not wrong.
But, like, given everything, you know, she's confused, she's probably just as confused as anyone here, and
yeah.
Her lashing out is perfectly understandable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, these sapphics be wild.
I feel like the Ikuhara special is characters who you want to hug and shake simultaneously. Like, my favorite character in Sarazanmai is Enta, and he fully fills the same role as Shiori.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's
fair. Yeah,
yeah. Because I felt for her, but I did want to shake her. I was like, this is not a good friend thing to do.
Like, yeah, and
being a bad friend, Shiori.
Well, and I'm sure, like, she's trying to be a friend at that point. It's just like lashing out and trying to be is bitter and doesn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah,
and I think this is one where I wanted to read the full thing from the booklet, which, you know, some of these are just Ikuhara doing musing or writing weird pieces of fiction. Some of them are like little pieces of character prose. And I feel like Shiori's is really illuminating in a way that maybe people don't read her episode before. I know it certainly changed how I looked at her. So the commentary for her episode is, I finally realized the truth. To think that she loved me back. What a miracle. But the loser in love is the one who lets their heart be ruled by it. Everyone's adopted a provocative attitude towards someone of the opposite sex that they like at least once or twice to get that person to notice them. So it's okay if I do that. This love will crumble if we touch. But when people don't touch, the love eventually dies away. That's why I decided to keep your love prisoner, to make sure that you love me forever. That game will make our love eternal. I'm sure of it. We were lovers lost from the beginning, which is a reference to a 70s film.
Yeah, I mean, like, that to me is not a hateable character. It is a very desperate character.
Yeah, like,
who, once again, is a child. Just gotta say, still a child.
Like, that's so poignant to me, is a lot, you know, these characters are all coming back to this childish idea of wanting something that's eternal, that lasts forever, which of course nothing in life does, and that's not always bad, but the idea of once you fall in love, the honeymoon phase eventually ends, but if you just ignore somebody, you know, they lose interest. So, like, trying to keep somebody in love with you, like, eternally pining, which, especially with sapphic characters, is very interesting to me. Like, the pining lesbian is such a fucking trope. And but Shiori is hurting herself, too, by doing this, because she's also in pain and not really getting to love someone. And it's fucking sad, you guys!
Oh, it's so sad. Like, I knew from the moment that bird flew into the glass and died, I was like, so did their love. Like, they're never gonna have, it's just never gonna be. And the moment she opens that fucking locket and it's a picture of her, I was like, God damn it, Shiori. God damn it, Shiori. Because, like, it's just like, oh, you didn't have to hurt each other like this. But, like, also, I think they did, because, like, also it's kind of a commentary on, like, yeah, like, society is not really geared toward sapphicism. Mm-hmm. Just isn't, right? Like, And it just hurts. It hurts so bad and so good and so bad all again.
Yeah, and
you know what the school needs?
Uh-huh.
Not the confessional therapy room, but a proper,
like, a pride flag?
LGBTQ rainbow club house.
Yeah.
Just needs
one. And everyone would be in it. Except,
oh my god, can they still like ascend up that infinite staircase to that banger of a song?
I don't know if that's ADA accessible, though.
There's an elevator.
Okay, we...
Okay.
Yeah, Nick. Yeah. Yeah. You just go up and the song is just, like, muffled and then it's blasting once the door's open.
You know what else fucks me up about Shiori is the fact that it's so popular now, decades later, to not have characters get together but just load a show with, like, shipping fodder and not be committal.
Time to send a postcard and meet me at the tower. Oh, no, it's really sad. And I could understand how if I were a teenager who also didn't understand my identity, how I could hate Shiori.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like she's a character you understand more as you get older. Sorry, please go on.
I feel like as a 31-year-old, I am like, wow, I have been and have seen so many queer people across, you know, my 31, almost 32 years of life that, like, have done things like this because it is a lashing out. Like, you know, it is very reminiscent of the Sapphicism and Dear Brother, where characters also lashed out and just did silly stuff. But, like, you're also a kid. You're a kid and you're trying to figure all this out.
I feel like I undermined her episode a little bit because the bit from the booklet that I read on our last episode about sort of talking about the fascination with brother-sister incest as, like, you know, we're not really separate. We're two halves of the same person. We're not really two separate people in a relationship. That comes from her dual episode. Mm-hmm. And, like, the struggle that they're having of they're going to grow up and be different people and they're not going to have the safety of that relationship anymore. You know, she even looks visibly upset when Utena tells, when she's thinking about, like, Utena telling her, you know, if you were a girl, like, I wouldn't be able to tell you and your brother apart.
Mm. Oh, like, the heartbreak in her eyes.
Like, no puberty.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's that one was really, that one also kind of got me because, like, it's just so sad because, like, I don't have siblings, but, like, I can only imagine the feeling of having been likened to a sibling all your life and then suddenly, like, you two aren't the same people. Because it's interesting because they sleep in the same room. And I was like, this room is pretty big, which probably means the house is pretty big. Y'all could have had separate bedrooms, but maybe they didn't want them.
But they still sleep in, like, tiny infant beds.
They do sleep in those tiny twin beds. And then Mickey brings them milkshakes every night. which I love. I did wonder, did he throw away hers when she denied it that first night? When she was like, no, too mature for your milkshake. Yeah, it's because she even fights with, like, her brother's, like, battle stance.
Yeah, all of the Black Rose duelists use their use the person that takes from sword and style.
Yeah, which also, like, gosh, does it look painful to draw the sword from someone who's not supposed to have the sword inside them? Does Anthe feel that pain? We'll never know, or I suppose we might. Oh no!
Yeah, a lot of assault imagery this arc.
Oh yeah! Mm. Oh yeah! Yeah.
Should we just get to Wakaba? Because I feel like that's the set of episodes that just comes along and smacks people in the face with a 2x4.
Yeah.
Around the midpoint
of the show.
Yeah, I really
think we should.
Let's go.
I think we really should. Yeah.
Go for it. Tell me your feelings.
Oh God. Oh gosh. Wow.
That was a twist.
Oh gosh. Oh my God. Oh my God. I felt so sad for her because, like, I was like, okay, she's going to get out of this relatively unscathed, kind of like Tomoko and Dear Brother.
No, Ikuhara looked at Tomoko and he was like, no one in this school would be that well adjusted. This is a lie.
Yeah, like, I mean, the reveal that is the reveal that, like, she just been keeping homeboy in her bedroom. It's like, wait, what? Excuse me? Wow, just the oh my god, and the pain in Utena's eyes when like she has to fight her best friend, who first of all does not wait for Utena to draw her sword. She's just like, on guard, sis. And that's not nice. That's not being a good friend. I do know, you know, Black Rose, a little bit of different personality, but that's still not kind. And it's just like, it's sad. Yeah. Oh, it's so sad. Yeah. Oh, Wakaba. Mm-hmm. Oh, girl, you didn't deserve this. But also, like, her feelings feel very valid. Yeah. In a really painful way.
I mean, going back to the fact that she initially really did have a crush on him was a good point. It's hard to shake those feelings sometimes.
Yeah, and the fact that he just, like, uses her so callously.
Yeah, that's... Like... He's so... Sayonji's so interesting to me in those episodes, because I feel like he's not consciously using her. He's just like a shithead in the way that I think particularly cis teenage boys can be, where he keeps apologizing and genuinely trying to leave for like as he's imposing on her. And then when he gives up the leaf, he's like, oh, well, I wanted to give a thing to say thank you. I don't... But this will help me, so I'll just get her a better, more expensive thing later. And, like, she has an overt... like, she's shown nonverbal signs that this is important to her, but she hasn't overtly said it, and he's an oblivious teenage shithead. So it's just sad. It makes me really sad how, like, decent he is. And then he goes right back to being a fucker.
So sad. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, when he walks into school and everyone's like, wait, how did he get past being expelled? Hold up, wait a minute, what? He's back?
Yeah.
He's back?
I mean, that's
and
what
I'm
you
like,
do.
Yeah, he's back!
That's the kind of gossiping you'll do when you hear about the one kid that got expelled coming back.
Yeah, and it sucks because, like, he does show that he has the capacity to be, like, a better just human being. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but what if... I wasn't. It's just like, no, but what if you were?
Yeah.
What if you were?
And I feel like the reason I can feel sad about Sayonji, despite the fact that he is, like, he physically abuses Anthy, and he's kind of an oblivious shithead to all the women in his life, is that the show, he seems like he can get better, and, like, when he's not under pressure from toxic masculinity, he does. But also the show just relentlessly dunks on him. Like, it... I don't know if you noticed, but they're directly reusing the stills from his introduction in the very first episode during the gossip scene.
I did notice that.
And then just layering
and
on the dialogue of everyone talking shit about him while he's just trying to regain... where he thinks he's like, oh yeah, I've got this handled. No, bud, you suck and you're sad.
It's like when you watch a Muppets... Christmas Carol and like Scrooge is out in the street and they're like, there goes Mr. Bitch, there goes Mr. Suckass. like so I'm just talking to him like he's hot shit and they're just like, oh, this fucker again. He's just like, it's so funny. And then they do reuse that still and you're just like, this is so funny. The show does not like this guy. It's what he deserves.
He does deserve it, is the thing. He does.
That's what he deserves.
No, I mean, but... you know, Sayonji has always been on the top of my this motherfucker list. And honestly, I was more angry at Wakaba for, like, still being hung up on him. Understandably. Like,
yeah.
Like, I understand if you have a crush, you do stupid things. Especially when you're young, you don't understand, you can fix him for sure, for real. But, like, no, he sucks so bad. And
oh, he sucks so bad.
Even if there is that glimmer of hope, it's like, none of these people should be giving him the time. He needs to, mm-hmm. you know, get better on his own away from here. He was expelled for a reason. He needs to find a better place for himself just as much as, you know, be away from these people that he's harmed.
Right.
Yeah.
Every time he backslides, it becomes a problem of a woman near him.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, too, is, like, the women in this show Their backs must be aching because they are carrying every single shitty man in their high school and middle school. Like, and he, Sionji especially, does make it the problem of literally any woman in proximity. He just sucks. Mm-hmm. But I don't, you know, I'm not gonna hold my breath on that one.
There is one boy in this run of episodes who mostly doesn't suck. And that would be Tetsuya, the Onion Prince.
Oh my god, the fact that they keep that running gag every time Wakaba's like, my Onion Prince will save me, and he's like, what? And then when he goes to confess, and she's like, off to see my prince, and he's like, what? This part, I mean, like, you know, like, do you know how nice you have to be for the Black Rose Circle to be like, actually, we're not taking any new clients at this time. So you should go.
So I think that there's two different ways you can read that scene, which I find really interesting. Because, so I want, this is the other episode that I wanted to read the full note from Ikuhara for. Which is, why is it that the path he must take does not lie here? In any other show, a character like Tetsuya probably would have been designed to gain the audience's sympathy. However, this is Revolutionary Girl Utena, and the Black Rose arc, no less. Anyone to open the door must be baptized. There are many things in this world that don't go the way you want them to. But even so, the Onion Girl is trying to be someone special. She's fighting. Isn't that exactly the story that the Black Rose arc is trying to tell? That's why there's no path here for the boy who's decided to just pray for her happiness from the sidelines. In most cases, the things that don't go the way you want them to have been decided by a system. How should we fight when we're up against a great power, one difficult to oppose? That's why there's no path here for the boy who's quit opposing it and decided to just pray for her happiness from the sidelines.
Hmm.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That actually, yeah, okay.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And but, like, I like that reading a lot, and it's interesting that that's sort of the intended take on the episode, but it did also strike me that rewatching that, he's also the only character who blames himself rather than someone else. Like, he's...
Yeah.
Like, he's not... actively fighting for something, but yeah, he says, what's wrong with me? He doesn't say what's wrong with her. Like, there's no... He's not fighting it for a change against a... Like, fighting for change against a system is hugely the theme of the show, but he's also not engaging... He's also not becoming part of the machinery that keeps the dual system running. He accepts that he has a role, and it, like, she had the right not to choose him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a really, like, self-aware moment that he has. Because he really just comes to, like, the black Rose Circle's, like, little one-on-one seminar. He just kind of comes to vent. Because he, like, apologizes. He's like, I'm so sorry I barged in, but, like, I just really need to talk to somebody. And then they're like, okay. So, actually, like, you've kind of talked to yourself about the problem. You're not really what we're looking for because you are a little too self-aware.
Please, like, go.
We need someone who's in the throes and you've gone through it. So, like, just dust off the chair, sign out, go back, you know, don't miss curfew. But I kind of like that that's how it resolves, right? Like,
yeah.
It's nice to see a character that understands that maybe they are also part of the problem that they are feeling, and that, like, part of the tension they have with Utena and Anthe might actually come from themselves.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any more feels about, because you mentioned up top when we were talking about Anthe that like, she really shows some real emotion in that scene.
Oh, I just, like, so in that scene where Wakaba, like, I mean, draws on Utena and is just, like, on the attack. And Anthe, like, screams and is begging her to draw the sword and fight back hit me, because like we've gone through a series of episodes where we've now seen other people have a sword drawn from them, and it is extremely painful. Like, there's a lot of things you can liken it to, but the one thing that they that connects every scene is like, it is a viscerally uncomfortable and incredibly violating thing. Which makes me wonder, does Anthy feel that and she's just masking it? Because like, she's this special vessel and she's this special person. And the fact that she was begging Utena to draw the sword, like, and screams and is like frightened and is watching, you know, as Wakaba like holds Utena at the blade's edge and like, you know, is willing to kill her. Like, it makes me wonder what other emotions Anthy has been hiding for the sake of her role, as she kind of starts to reveal more and more emotions through her connection to Utena.
Yeah, because their relationship has really come along and changed. Like, Utena isn't actively trying to push her to be quote-unquote normal, like, in some ways. Like, their relationship changes a lot this arc.
Yeah, it's super interesting too, because Anthy is starting to have some autonomy. Like, she goes out on her own. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, of course it's like to go to her brother that abuses her, but she does go shopping.
She on her does. Own,
and that's nice. And she has like a little TV that she watches, like TV, and eats her little chips.
She in watches front of, and the that's, home that's shopping super cute. Channel. She has like
I
the
love
most
that Anthy watches QVC. I love that in an arc where there's a giant MLM, Anthy sits down and she's like, you know what, let me just watch some QVC. I could use a new robe.
Like, for her. Anthy has like the most middle-aged auntie hobbies of all. It's a beautiful character trait that I love.
Yeah. Walking around knitting a red sweater. Watching QVC while eating her little chips. Looked like she was eating either some just regular salt. Maybe she gets mild salt because Anthy's very conscious of her cholesterol. You know, like cooking. I do like that there is one point where she's like, oh, maybe I can make some curry again. And Utena's like, no. Shut that down. No. Like one of the credit scenes, you know, she's starting to develop a personality, and I like who I think she has the potential to be. I just worry that she's going to have to go through so much to get there, so much more to get there.
Because
how many episodes is this anime again, Bri?
It is 39, and we have watched 20.
She's going to have to go through a lot more to get there.
And there's a movie.
Boy.
There is also a movie, but the movie's kind of a sequel.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, like, she also has to go through the movie.
She does. She does.
Okay, so one day Anthy will be happy and have some autonomy. Yay. Yay.
Was there anything we want, like, you wanted to hit on, Chiaki, that we haven't covered?
You know, actually, one thing about the whole, you know, Black Rose Saga, you know, in the very first instance of discussing that tower and just casually mentioning that 100 people have just died in there.
Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah. And they have the shoes.
Yep. Yeah,
and am I correct that once they take the ring, they're just cremating them? They're like, oh, yeah.
I mean, they were dead already.
You're dead, but like, you're deader than dead, bruh. Mm. Super unuseless. It's pretty sad.
Yeah.
A little fucked up there, bro.
Well, this is the man who would use the sarin gas attacks as a thematic motivator for the series he made after this. So,
Wait, what series came after this?
Penguin Drum, which is actually the only one of his series I've not watched.
Okay. It's about penguins. I'm going to tell you, I doubt it's about penguins, Chiaki, don't you? Nope, it's not about penguins.
It does have penguins in it.
I will say, This has definitely made me want to watch Yuri Kuma Arashi. And I will say, between the recording of the first episode of this series and this one, I did see the opening and whoa, oh my God, was that allowed to be on TV?
Yuri Kuma's horny.
Jesus Christ.
So Yuri Kuma got in trouble a little, from what I understand.
Really? Yeah. Because it's super horny. It's super horny in that opening. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, hold off on that. We'll podcast about that if y'all are game. Because I would. You have no idea how much I'd love to hear your thoughts on Yuri Kuma.
Oh, gosh. I was like, what is the joke? Kuma shock? I was having some Kuma shock. Like, oh my God. Whoa. Yeah, so I'm getting that he's kind of a freak of a creator. He kind of a freak, and I kind of like that.
So. All right. So for the next episode of the podcast, we will be watching episodes 21 through 27, which is the rest of the Black Rose saga, and just sort of touching our toes into the Apocalypse saga. Yay! Ooh.
Yeah.
Yay.
So you will get to have a little bit of that good, good surrealism, Sai.
I'm excited.
Excited.
Yeah. Folks seem to be really, really enjoying y'all's reactions, and that makes me so happy. It really does. It's been such a joy to do this.
Oh, I'm so glad people are enjoying us react to this genuinely good show that I've never known I needed.
I think that this Utena show might be good. No, but really, I'm really glad that you're genuinely enjoying it outside of content reasons. Like, that makes me super happy.
I will say the one bad thing to come out of this watch is that I keep going around my house singing the song. Like, in the background, I'm like, Zettai, Ume Moku. Like, I'm just, like, going around the house. And I'll just be like, darkness in the light. Every time I walk up the stairs, it starts playing. So that's probably not a great habit I picked up. But it's a banger. It's such a banger.
It's a good song.
It is. It's a thing. Good song. All right.
They exchange a little depending on who it is. Yeah, it's great.
They do. There's a special insert song for every duel that always is both a bunch of nonsense words and also broadly thematically relevant. Like Wakaba's song talking about Pyrrhic victories. Yay, it's sad.
Love it.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, AnnaFam. As I mentioned up top, if you liked this, you can always find all of our links now on our Linktree / Anime Feminist. Or if you want a list the old-fashioned way, you can check out our website, animefeminist.com or animefeminist.com/store, where we have cool merch that tells people that they should watch more shoujo, for example, or be a cute trans magical girl. If you really liked this, please consider going to our Patreon or our Ko-fi and chucking us a buck a month, because it helps us to pay our editors and contributors more. We were actually finally able to raise our rates for this year, and we're currently raising on Ko-fi to be able to hold on to that rate increase for 2025. So yeah, every little bit helps. We're on the socials, at Anime Feminist on Blue Sky, on Mastodon, and on Tumblr, and co-host. We are also on TikTok and Instagram as AnnaFem Site. Thank you so much for joining us, folks, and until next time, have you revolutionized the world today?